Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. On today's show, we'll be talking to the wonderful Emily Bellet. Emily is an accomplished author of a best-selling, Amazon best-selling book, You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich. She is a podcaster, a serial entrepreneur, and founder and CEO of Vestpod, a thriving community she's built to educate, uplift, and inspire women to talk about money. Emily, thank you so much for being here with me today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Hi, Dav. Thank you so much for having me today. Thanks for your kind intro. So I think you've said a lot of things. So basically, I'm the founder of Vestpod, vestpod.com. So I've built a platform. I think we're quite aligned with WineCheck in terms of mission, but it's really to empower women financially, open up the conversation about money. And my passion is about helping women get started investing in the stock market and making sure that they grow their money over the long term. And with Vestpod, I mean, we have a few different things. So I published my book, You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich. It was 2 years ago and we just did like a revised version. And we have a podcast called The Wallet, where we interview weekly. We talk about money. You've been on the podcast, actually, and we had this great conversation. And we do like workshops, classes, courses, and I do a lot of corporate wellness training. So really trying to find all the women and tell them, you know, let's get started. How do we do it? Let's do it together. We need more money. There's so many like structural issues. So it's really, for me, it's the motivation, the confidence, and also the education of knowing, you know, how do you do these things?
Yes. I think, you know, one of the things that always strikes me when we, when we have various, panel discussions or workshops and things of that nature, when you're coming together with, really well-educated professional women who are smashing it in all aspects of their lives, real power women. And the thing that's always struck me from as far back as, I guess, even as early as me having started my career and starting to recognize that something was up when it came to, the representation of women, both within the finance industry and also representation in terms of client base, that despite all of our various accolades and credentials, the confidence just wasn't there. And so exactly as you've described, it's, it's as much about kind of sharing the knowledge and the education. But I'm also very, very mindful and sensitive to the fact that we're already dealing with very well-educated women. So it's more than just, their ability to grasp, quite straightforward concept. It's just that it may not necessarily have been broken down to them in a way that is relatable. But from your experience, when we think about that confidence gap, where do you think some of that comes from?
So, I completely relate to what you're saying. So, I worked in banking for a long time. I worked in private equity. My job was actually to be an investor. I worked for Lehman Brothers. So I was sort of, in the middle of, this financial world. And unfortunately also, there at the beginning of the, financial crisis. Working on big transactions, managing money, returning money to my investors. But actually, I wasn't investing money for myself. And I consider myself to be, quite privileged and, educated in terms of, working in, studying economics, studying finance, being able to get a job in London, moving from France to London. And then I was like, but this is really stupid. Like, where do I even start? And at some point, you sort of procrastinate. You don't think about it. You're also really busy in your professional life. And you think, I'm going to be fine. But then you realize, actually, there's not so many women in my space. Why is that? Well, because maybe they wanted to have their families. They wanted to sort of do something else. They didn't like, the values maybe of the organizations. And they thought, okay, I'm going to work part-time. And slowly you see these women sort of disappear at the senior level from, this financial financial institutions. And I think, I mean, I'm sure you had the same experience. So you sort of try to project yourself and you're like, wow, that's not going to work. So maybe actually I won't be able to, you know, stay in banking forever. So maybe I need to start thinking about, you know, my finances, my salary, start negotiating, putting money on the side. But, you know, it's sort of a learning curve. How do you learn about pensions? How do you learn about savings? And to be honest, you can learn everything online. You can go today, Google all these things. You go to your bank website, amazing resources everywhere. You know, our platforms, we also sort of, you know, give different information or approach it a different way. But, you know, the products are going to be the same. And you can very quickly learn all these things. But for me, that was trying to find what's the trigger. Why are we not doing these things? Why are we procrastinating? And unfortunately, and maybe we'll talk about that, but I'm sure that's something you talk a lot with your community, is, you know, the pension gap and the wealth gap. So women were lagging behind because we're earning less money. We're not saving, you know, we're saving, but, you know, we have less money earned. So that means less money saved in our pocket, less money invested for the future. We don't necessarily want to take more risk because we feel maybe we're going to lose this money. We may have different goals. So we're like, I'm not too sure. We want to be a bit perfectionist, and then, you know, we sort of not go into these areas, and we maybe not have these conversations, maybe because we think it's awkward to talk about money. It can be a bit embarrassing. And I was the first one, you know, like, you know, never had any money conversation. Don't really know where to start with my family or with my friends. And then, you know, when you have a sort of different level of earnings, you know, talking about, you know, maybe financial privilege, where you come from, these are like quite tricky conversations to have.
Yes.
So you just don't do it. And you think it's okay. I'll do it next year. I'll do it in 5 years. I'll do it in 10 years. But the issue is when you wait 10 years and 20 years to start saving, especially for retirement, that's going to create like a huge impact on your finances at the end of your life. So for me, confidence is more that I think women are really, you know, confident. I think they are risk aware. They're not necessarily risk averse. But the problem is because you've been waiting too long and you're trying to be really perfect in what you do, then you sort of lose a bit this confidence. So you start questioning like your ability to be able to manage your finances. But I think, you know, women are extremely capable and you know, managing
definitely
money. A lot of you, you know, you do it at work, like you manage this big budget for your employer, or if you run a business, you do your business finances and stuff. But the personal one, we're like, I'll do it later. I don't want to think about it and stuff. So I think confidence is one thing, but it's, you know, where does this lack of confidence come from? And I think it's sort of building up over time, and it doesn't help that, you know, you're not doing the work for yourself, because then you're petrified and you don't want to get started.
So Emily, when you think about the avalanche of messages we receive, and I guess just the overwhelming amount of information that's out there, that's, as you say, you can Google it and get this information. It's everywhere you look on social media, seemingly. I mean, I recognize that you and I probably exist within a bit of an echo chamber on social media, because, you know, we'd be following personal. I have actually had to step away and I let, you know, our wonderful social media manager do a lot of that stuff, because I was starting to feel like, oh my God, like I don't see anything else except chat about personal finance. But when you think about how much information is out there, it would make sense that people who are not living and breathing this stuff every day could easily feel overwhelmed. And as a result, you find yourself paralyzed and not doing anything at all. So exactly as you say, that procrastination creeps in. What do you think, you know, or what would you say to those people who would say, well, why would anyone pay for a service like Vestpod or for a service like Raincheck when they can get all of this information for free? And I guess more specifically, why should we assume that women want to speak to other women about their money? What, you know, what, based on your experience of some of the Vestpod community and some of the things that they have said, what do you think that, you know, draws women towards other women when they have kind of challenges of this nature?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can really relate to what you're saying about, you know, us being in an echo chamber. My Instagram is, you know, only talking, people talking about money, which is not always easy. And what you realize is it's amazing to have different perspectives.
Yes.
And this is what I, you know, really value looking at that. But in the end, we should try to sort of summarize. And for me, the book was actually a really good way
because we produce so much content, you know, the podcast, the newsletters, the blog, we, you know, in the courses and stuff. Mm-hmm. But for someone who starts and want to spend like, you know, just 2 hours, they almost just need like an introduction, or they need, I think the book is nice because it's sort of like you switch off your phone. Mm-hmm. You're not online. You're not clicking on, you know, 1,000 things at the same time. And I know you do it because I do, you know, we all do it. It's really hard to focus, but I think with the book, maybe you sort of reconnect with that and you try to ignore the news. You're right. We are bombarded with financial news. Even if you don't read the FT and stuff, you're going to talk about inflation, mortgages, interest rates. And it's also people around you, like your friends are buying a place. Why can't I afford to buy a place? We're the same age. My friends are throwing a big wedding. I don't have money. You know, how come my friend is buying a lot of stuff? But, you know, where is she finding the money and stuff like that? So it's also sort of like the comparison with others, but not being able to step in and just open up the conversation because we feel a bit bad about it.
Yes.
And I think what we're trying to provide now, it's a clear information. So I see ourselves as a bit like, you know, the medium. Mm-hmm. We, you know, you could find the information. You could go on the government website. And for anyone, I always send them to like Money Helper, for example, the government website, very clear information, very mm-hmm. concise, maybe not very fun, no personal stories and stuff.
Yeah, let's try.
If you want to learn what's a stock and share ISA, what's a lifetime ISA, how different is it from a pension, you go there, you have all your information. I think what we're trying to do is make this information a bit more, you know, digestible, a bit more, you know, engaging, a bit more fun, because we have our own brandings, we have our own values, we just give it a spin that will help people to engage a little bit more with the content. And then what we do, I think, it's showing up. So you show up, people like what you say, they like what you do. And I think it's why have we built some also communities around us is because I think it's really scary when you sort of become this like professor, but when you're on Instagram, it's called more of a guru.
Yes.
You know, and people have called me like the, you know, a guru of personal finance. And I don't like the term because for me, it's like, you have to know, like, you know, you have to have the knowledge and stuff. And I'm just here to give you the inspiration. I'm just here to open up about these topics. I'm just here to have the difficult conversations. But in the end, you can learn from me. You can learn from, you know, the Vespo teachers. You can learn from Davinia. But actually, you will learn so much from having this one-on-one conversation with your peers. And the best thing you can do is actually just find a sort of accountability group. Mm-hmm. 4 friends, 3 friends, 5 friends, 10 friends, whatever you think is right. Right, set up a WhatsApp group and together talk about how do you repay debt, how do you save for your goals, how do you put money into your pension. And if you need some more, like, you know, technical knowledge, if you need some inspiration, if you want to be part of a bigger movement, then, you know, you join our communities. But I think the learning is actually made on a very small scale. The problem is when you set up a business in these spaces, it's all about growing fast, scale, having the biggest communities, you know. That's how sort of the, again, like we're going back to this investment world, that's how we define success. How do you build a big business? How do you make a lot of money from your mm-hmm. business and stuff? But this, I think for me, doesn't go in the right way when you think about your users, your consumers, because they want something small. They want something where they have a voice. They want to be heard. They want to be seen. So it's how do you manage these communities? So I think there's a lot of value, you know, going in for these groups, going for these communities. But we're all different, and some people will just learn on the back of, you know, YouTube videos, and that's you know how I started, and reading books are really cheap for me. You know, you can buy 10 books about finance, you would have such a good idea. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you want to have a conversation, and you can, you know, start online and see what you see on social media and stuff. Just be careful, you know, who you follow, the sort of the advice, even if it's never advice,
do your due diligence,
you know,
for
fine
sure.
line fine line between advice, guidance, so make sure you do your due diligence, and then maybe sign up to one of these communities and get started and exchange about, you know, your life, or try to give tips to others. I think for me, something I've learned building Vespod is the best way to learn something is actually to teach. You know, I wasn't a teacher, I was, you know, private equity analyst working in front of my computer days and nights building models and presentations and stuff. Didn't like public speaking. I would never have thought I would do like a podcast with you today. But it's actually starting the journey, and even if you know nothing, it's how do you learn and how do you explain what you've learned to others? And, you know, this can be a friend, it can be a community, it can be anyone. Try to build maybe, you know, following, try to blog about it, write a newsletter. So it can be just a hobby, it can be just for fun. But it's how do you help also someone with their finances? And if you don't know the technicalities, it's more around, yeah, maybe, you know, the mindset, how you see money, and really open up this conversation, because that's really helpful for everyone to actually talk about these things.
Yeah, I mean, you've said so many things, you've dropped so many gems in that response, Emily, honestly. One thing that stands out for me is your point about, you know, the best way to learn is to teach. Like, that in and of itself is like a mic drop moment, because if you think about, you know, how we engage with different things, and also our relationship with others versus our relationship with ourselves. So quite often, if we think that we have to show up for someone else, we're going to show up and bring our A game. And sometimes if we have to show up and it's just for us, like the audience is just ourselves and there's nobody to hold us to account, you know, maybe you're going to bring like an A minus or a B game. You know, in the act of kind of knowing that you have to, you know, help somebody else to understand a concept or to take action, then you really are motivated to help them do it in the best possible way. So that's a really excellent point. Two other things that you said, which I love, and, you know, the Rainmakers will know this about me, that I'm a real tough love advocate. And as much as I'm, you know, a massive hype queen and cheerleader for anybody that knows me, my personal life and through the Rainmaker community, I'm also a big believer in taking action, in showing up, and also accountability. I think without those three things, effectively what happens is you can become a talking shop. So you can have a series of conversations about something, but unless you start to do something about it, nothing really changes, nothing happens. And one of the thoughts that I've had more recently, you know, just from a personal perspective, just turning over in my own mind, you know, what are some of the big things that need to happen in order for us to make real progress and transformational change with regard to women's relationship with money, and also more practically, our share of wealth in general. And I've been thinking quite a lot about personal responsibility. And as much as, you know, we talk all the time, and again, you know, this could be a result of the echo chamber that we live within. I'm acutely aware of that fact. But certainly, you know, there's this amplification of messages around some of the structural challenges that women face. You know, the pay gap, the motherhood penalty, as we've talked about before, which sees, you know, women who, you know, go on to have children being penalized over the course of their working lives, you know, not least when it comes to their earnings potential over the course of their careers. And then, you know, the knock-on impact on the gender pension gap and all of those sorts of things. So we are all aware of some of the institutional challenges that exist. But then the thing that I always, you know, I always stress to the Rainmakers is, what do we have control over today? And what action can we take in our personal lives? So, I mean, my question to you is, you know, to what extent do you think personal responsibility plays a role in helping us to resolve some of these challenges? I mean, I'm not going to ask what you think the balance is in terms of, you know, institutional responsibility versus personal responsibility, but I'm just interested in your perspective on, you know, that point. You know, what could and should we be doing more of, I guess.
No, I think it's you know, it's a really difficult, you know, situation, I think, for women with all these, you know, structural issues that we know really well. But you're right. I mean, you can't change these things unless you want to change these things. And then, you know, that should be your battle. And you should really go and fight, you know, and ask for, you know, petitions and write to your MPs and, you know, try to change these things. But you have your life, you're busy, you have your job, you're trying to make money, you're trying to, you know, have enough money for your family, build financial security, freedom, whatever you're doing. And the government has left us a big responsibility in the end, because if you think about just the state pension, for example, the state pension is there. It should be paying you when you retire 9K a year, which also is taxable, but you need to have worked for, you know, 35 years, have 35 years of, you know, qualifying earnings for yourself. Women will drop out of the workforce. We won't have our full state pension. And who knows, like in 30 years time, 40 years time, if we actually going to get this money.
Yeah.
So the probability of getting something is quite low. So basically you work all your life. You also pay your taxes and stuff, but you don't know if you're going to get something at the end of the game. So you have to save, and you have to save through a workplace pension, a private pension, stocks and either whatever it is, but you have to save for yourself. And for me, in itself, that's really a big responsibility, because at the same time, you're not educating people on their personal finances. You allow financial institutions to throw at people products such as, you know, credit cards. There's now, you know, the payday loan. So, you can cut that, but the buy now, pay later. So it's very easy to actually, you know, spend money, but no one is telling you how to organize these finances, how to be in control. And if we all add like this, like sort of financial education layer when we started our life, then we wouldn't maybe overspend, or maybe we would have people helping us to understand how we can do better, how we can repay our debt, have a plan in place, and feel a bit more in control. Even if it's not easy, at least feel in control and know that, you know, I need to save, and I need to save, you know, at my first job, and I need to go and negotiate my salary.
Yes.
I need to prepare for when I have a baby, and start, you know, budgeting in advance, have a talk with my partner, making sure my partner pays into my pension if you have a baby. Yes. Together, you know, share the cost of childcare. So the education, I think, for me, can solve a big part of the issue. Now what we're trying to do is play catch up, and, you know, sort of juggle with all these things. Now, you know, if you think you can't change these things, then, you know, you sort of have to move on and think about the things you can change.
Yes.
Because you can be complaining all the time. And there's some situations where it's really, really hard. So I think if, you know, you're listening to this podcast, maybe in the Rain Check community or the Vespod community, I guess you're already at a stage where, you know, you're thinking a bit about your financial future. Mm-hmm. And you know, do this exercise and think about your life. But It's what can you change? What can you change for yourself? You're not happy with the current situation. Okay, where do you want to go? And for me, you know, start writing where do you see yourself in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years? Mm-hmm. What are the things you need in place to make sure you have this financial security? And again, the information is everywhere, but it's just a matter of sitting down and writing that for yourself. Then looking at how much money do I make? Is it enough?
Yes.
Do I need to ask for more money? Do I need to go renegotiate my salary? This is uncomfortable. We don't like doing these things. But it's, you know, the exercise of doing it again and again and again, and making sure there's enough money coming in to be able to pay for your goals, enough money to repay your debt, enough money to sort of build this like financial security, and then potentially later on, you know, financial freedom, financial independence. But there's a lot of reasons why we're maybe not doing that. So confidence, maybe one. I think, you know, self-empowerment. So just really trying to think about how can I do it? I'm willing to do it, but I think that's what you've been talking about before. It's how do I take action.
Yes.
For myself? And in this is really like, think about you. Stop thinking about your neighbors. Stop thinking about your friend, about your family, about what people will think about you. And for me, that was a big thing. Like, you know, what society thinks about who you are, what you should be doing, at which stage you should be in your life today. You shouldn't, you know, this shouldn't matter.
It's a distraction for sure.
It's a distraction, but for a lot of people and I mean, it was for me, it actually drives your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just following these ideas, you're following what other people are doing and stuff, but you're petrified and you don't do it for yourself. So it's, for me, it's like literally ignoring the noise, ignoring what other people are doing, and really do it for yourself. Sit down with your money, and you may need to do a little bit of, you know, self, you know, reflection, asking yourself what is money for you, potentially, you know, get some help in trying to understand what are my money blocks, what do I want to achieve in life. We acquire our financial habits very young, so there may be a lot of work of, you know, undoing things and starting from a blank page. But it's not, you know, it's really like building confidence and not thinking you're better than others or you're less able than others. It's just like, you know, thinking for yourself, like you feel judged all the time or you judge others. But this, you know, for me, like I don't care anymore. It's really like, you know, I try to do it for myself. And of course you help others, you know, it's having a lot of empathy, is making sure, you know, you help a neighbor, you know, you look at your other priorities, but really do the work for yourself, because no one is going to do it for you, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, this, and you know, the last thing that you said, you know, that point about you, you know, lifting as you climb. So, you know, as you acquire more knowledge, then you are better able to support the people around you, whether in a professional capacity or, you know, even from a personal perspective, you know, speaking with the women in your personal life, and the men too, you know, because there is, I can't tell you how many times I have men approach me and say, you know, can men be rainmakers as well? And I'm like, well, yeah, kinda, but just know that, you know, that the slant and the focus of the of, you know, what we'll be talking about primarily outside of, you know, the more technical principles around how do you start investing, how do you run your life like a business, which is one of my favorite modules in the program, you know, in which we're talking about how do we, you know, steal best practice from the business world about how they are running their, you know, running businesses efficiently, and how can we apply that to our personal lives. But I always say to the men, you know, yes, you know, it's an inclusive space, but just know we are trying to close some hefty gaps that women already face. And it's useful for you to be part of the conversation, because actually you can become, you know, I think the word ally is overused, but you can actually become, you know, a lieutenant in helping us to overturn some of these things and call out things in your workplace or in your own business where you see some of these disparities springing up. So definitely everything that you said there really, really resonates, not least your point about, you know, the point at which we start to form our money habits. And this is something that I'm particularly interested in your view on as a mother yourself, a mother of three. Obviously, I have two daughters myself, and we both know the research that shows that children form their money habits as early as the age of seven, which is staggering to me. I mean, I don't know what you were doing when you were seven, but I don't remember thinking about money, but it's crazy to me to think. In fact, I think my sister was just about to be born. I don't remember at all thinking about, you know, money in that sense. But it's interesting to know that, you know, if you think the seeds of your kind of financial literacy or your financial journey start to be planted that early in your childhood, what the implications might be for later life. And you know, in particular, you know, some of the money blocks that we might have, our relationship with money, our money mindset. So it's not at all about our propensity to earn money per se, but more about what we do with that money and how we feel about having earned that money in the first place. You know, you touched on, you know, it's not about trying to feel superior to others. And it's not about, you know, shrinking yourself in deference to others based on earnings.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of these things are all kind of part of the same conversation, really. So I'm interested in what you're teaching your children about money. In particular, you know, having a daughter and sons, you know, and I know that your daughter is very little. But do you, you know, are you consciously aware of the fact that, you know, are, you know, maybe you'll be giving different messages, or you making a point to make sure that the messages are consistent across both your sons and your daughter?
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, I mean, as you say, my daughter is quite young. She's 18 months, but it's how do you raise boys versus you raise girls? And I think when, you know, when we talk about finances, I think, you know, the layers, the basics have to be the same. And I'm just going to show tell you one example is, so my son is 6.5, so I'm like, wow, I have 6 more months before
yeah, when my daughter turned 7, I was like, oh god, yeah.
And so one thing we discussed the other day was coming back from school, and he was like, you know, I didn't have this birthday present from this person, whatever, and I want this toy. And then we started talking about sort of, you know, consumerism and how, you know, that they already have so many toys and they don't need to have more toys. And why is that? Because then we'll need to produce these toys in factories, and then that's going to, you know, pollute the planet. And also these factories are based on countries where people are not paid properly to do their jobs. And then what do you do when you don't need your old toys and you have to, okay, maybe you give them to a charity shop, which is great, but they may not be able to sell these if, you know, they are broken, and then they throw them away and you have to destroy these toys because they're hard to, you know, recycle, and it's plastic, and then that, you know, creates like more maybe pollution that, you know, that uses more energy. And I think these concepts for kids are very easy to understand. And you'll be surprised, like I think in school they talk about, you know, recycling, preserving the planet, and stuff. It's quite a big thing for kids. They talk about money, they talk about the basic stuff like, you know, delay gratification, savings, you know, do your math, feel comfortable around numbers. So maybe that's something we didn't have at the time, or maybe I don't remember. But I think it's having the conversation you have as adult. But first of all, you have to be in a position,
you have to have a view on all these things. Like, what do you think about consuming more or consuming less? What do you think about, you know, investing in ethically, for example, or in, you know, ethical manner, consuming better? And once you know what you want for yourself, you have your own, you know, money mindset, you start saving for yourself. I think then it's easier to sort of have this conversation with kids, because they're going to ask you the difficult question.
Yes.
they're going to put you on the spot and ask you, you know, why do you do that? And why don't we do that? And why don't we recycle that? And why, you know, are we driving an electric car? Why is it better? And they're going to have this conversation then with their friends. So I think it starts very young. So it's not necessarily about money itself, but I think about how we consume, the lifestyle we have, the stuff we buy. So take them to the supermarket. I mean, when I go to the supermarket with the kids, they're like, I want this and that and this and that. And it's just saying no.
Yes.
No.
You know, you're, we have you're to be comfortable with no.
Yeah, and it's okay. Of course, I can buy you a, you know, pack of sweetie maybe once in a while, but the rule is it's no. And why? Because then it's yes one time, and then the second time they want it again, and they don't understand why, you know, you bought it last time and you don't buy it this time. So I think it's maybe having some rules, and you define your own rules where, you know, you're comfortable. And I think it should be the same for, you know, gifts and birthdays. So, you know, what about, you know, we stop buying a lot of these things. Like, you do a birthday party for kids and there's 20 kids and they all show up with a present.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? No, like, it doesn't.
Not at all.
It sends such a wrong message to the children. But it's hard because society told you that, you know, when a kid is doing a birthday party, you have to bring a present. You have to bring a nice present of a certain value or not. And again, this is, you know, being quite privileged to, you know, to be able to do that, but the kids don't understand, like, why, you know, why do you have all these things, all these presents and stuff. And also, if I think the opposite is, if you're struggling with money at home, it's trying not to spread the, you know, the fear and the stress to the kids.
Yes.
So they will feel it. But, you know, if you're struggling with debt, if you're struggling because you don't have enough money at the end of the month, I think it's trying to sort out these things for yourself. So take a moment for you, maybe sit down, maybe with an advisor, maybe with a debt charity, and really try to work out on how you feel about that, trying to solve your own issues, put a plan in place to really know what are the things I can do, and then try to more actively communicate maybe with your children instead of letting them second guess how you're feeling, because they will feel the stress. I mean, kids are really good at doing that.
Yes.
So doing it a bit more actively, and this can be just one thing you do a month, or it can be one rule, but I think opening up about the conversation. I think the difference between boys and girls, for me, there's I don't see any difference, but I think actually we may need to push girls a little bit in terms of, for me, self-worth, in
yes.
terms of confidence, in terms of, you know, being able to, you know, stand up and say the things they want. I think your girls or, you know, my daughter, because of the work we do, then it's very clear that, you know, we tend to be quite feminist and always, you know, talk about these issues. But it's going to be the environment also around them, what people think about girls and how you can help them more. But then in terms of, you know, telling them the things they need to do with their money, I think it should be the same for boys and girls. And I think for boys especially, is how you treat girls. I think for me, it's it's something I'm really thinking about at the moment, with everything that's happening in, you know, schools and bullying and, you know, sexual harassment and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, these are things that, you know, behaviors that you can work on and talk about from a very early age. So always asking your sister, is she okay if you do that?
Yes.
You know, really respect her if she says no. I mean, this is a different conversation, but, you know, money very quickly is going to be part of this game also. So
absolutely.
Really trying to have a more like holistic approach to how you raise kids. But again, I'm not, you know, I don't know, like, you know, I'm just trying.
It's like a big experiment, isn't it?
It's a big experiment and it's a scary one.
Yeah.
You know, all these things, like, you know, choosing schools, choosing, you know, where you live, how you live, what you read. And I think for me, it's trying to show them a lot of the things that happen, sort of filtering what's happening in the world, and to, you know, to their level maybe, and try for them to understand and be able to ask questions, read a lot of different things, and we'll see. But really keeping the conversation open, and if you see something is not right, try to have this difficult conversation.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as you've highlighted there, children are way more perceptive than we ever give them credit for. So even your point about, you know, let's say if you're in a position of struggle, for example, financially, and, you know, it's so challenging, you know, you could be stressed about all sorts of different things. I mean, I have my daughter say to me sometimes, you know, I might get an email, or I might be reading a message or something. And I've got a terrible poker face, like whatever, any emotion that I'm feeling, my friends know this about me, anything that I'm feeling, it's written all over my face, definitely. And so my daughter will say to me, "Mommy, why are you frowning?" And I'm like, "Really? Am I frowning?" And she's like, "Yes, stop frowning." And she'll come and smooth out my face. And I'm like, "Thank you," because Mommy doesn't want wrinkles on her face. But, you know, they are very good at holding you to account and holding up a mirror to you. Even if you don't want to look in the mirror, they are really good at holding up that mirror. But one of the things that you mentioned with regard to kind of self-advocacy, self-worth, and perhaps the need to push our daughters slightly more in that respect versus our sons. And of course, there's no one size fits all. You know, the same principles would apply across the board. You're just kind of adjusting the levers each time with each child. Yeah. One of the things that I'm very mindful of is, you know, I've got two very assertive daughters. They're assertive in different ways. And the one thing that I am very mindful not to do, and their dad is the same, is to not have them shrink in any way, to be respectful always, to speak up and speak their minds. But we are not believers at all in this kind of children should be seen and not heard, which I think, you know, in certain cultures and from certain backgrounds can still very much be the prevailing idea when it comes to children. So particularly with our girls, we don't want them ever to feel that their voices are invalid or shouldn't be heard. And I think that's an important message at a very early stage too. So Emily, one of the things that comes up for me quite a lot, I think people are often, even though we are friends, we occupy a very similar space from a professional perspective. We're both on this mission to financially uplift and motivate women. But I remember coming to your book launch, and I'll never forget this, and somebody said to me, "Oh, you're the competition." So he asked me what I did, and I said, "Oh, you know, I run Range Check." He's like, "Oh, well, why are you here? You're the competition." And I just remember thinking, it's so interesting that... and of course, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it did make me think that I wonder whether that's what people think of women in business occupying different spaces. And, you know, there were, at least traditionally, lots of stereotypes about women being very competitive with one another and not wanting to see others or see one another succeed and thrive, which couldn't be more contrary to the kind of work that we're doing, which is to uplift women. And it's not just uplifting them financially, it's just uplifting them in general. So I just wondered what your perspective or experience was with regard to that, you know, in terms of the stories that swirl around with regard to women being rivals versus collaborators. And we've collaborated loads, including on this podcast.
Yeah, no, of course. And I remember you coming to my book launch, and also to this event we held with Helena Morrissey in Jordich. I remember you were there, and we were not, you know, we were in the same space, we knew each other, but at the time we were not collaborating, which, you know, was fine. And today we are collaborating. So I think there's also different stages, and you need also, when you launch a business, to also find, like, you know, your voice, who you are and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to work together, especially if you have the same mission. It's not always easy, to be honest, especially, you know, I think it's a learning curve, and you get to know each other and you do a lot more things together, and then you build trust. Mm-hmm. And I know both of us, we could work together. Like, you know, we've been having such amazing conversation, and there's so many things we could do together. And it's also, you know, if you're not too sure, try to be a bit more rational about it. Like, you know, what are your objectives? What is your partner objective? Because I really see that as, you know, a partnership when you start working together.
Yes.
How you can elevate each other and your communities and know why you're doing it. You know, why are you doing it? Why is Davinia doing it? How we can help better our communities, how we can help better our consumers. It's also, you know, it doesn't need to be forever in one way. Like, you know, you can you can both change your mind and decide to work in a different way. Mm-hmm. You can sort of adjust, you can be a bit more flexible. I think it has to be like a win-win, and be really honest with each other. So, you know, if you don't feel like it, maybe you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all about, I think it's amazing to, you know, to collaborate and we should do it, but if you're not sure, maybe it's not for now, maybe it's for later. Can you collaborate on something smaller and see how you work together and maybe work on something bigger? But I think, you know, it's really important to, again, like, you know, open the conversation, mm-hmm. And see how you can do things together. And if you look at research, it's, you know, lots of different research from, you know, Harvard Business School. I can send you a few, you know, collaboration always wins versus competition. In a lot of these, you know, industries, people have been building amazing things together because they've been working on technology, they've been working on ideas, and it's been like, you know, win-win collaborations. Yes. Very, very, very often. So it's how you also, you know, keep connecting, sharing ideas, maybe organizing a few things together and see how it goes. And maybe it's more and maybe, you know, no more, but at least, you know, keep the conversation open. It's very important. If you think that's stressful, because I think, you know, you were talking about this sort of echo chamber, you may be trying to spend mm-hmm. less time on Instagram, because this is really stressful, seeing people in your space.
Definitely.
Well, not, I don't see anyone as my, you know, direct competitor, because I think a business is really personal. You have what you see from a business because you're just following me on Instagram versus, you know, what's happening within Vespod and all the things we're working on and these big projects and exciting things and stuff. So it's not comparing yourself. I don't see people as direct competitors. I see people who build stuff in my space, who have, you know, these big missions, and we all have a different audience. We are all very different in the way we work. We come from, you know, a different background. We're going to a different place. Like, you know, you don't know, I think for Vespod, you know, we have business goals. I also have like personal goals, mm-hmm. and you know, we all going to be different. So it's trying to stop comparing yourself to others or fear that, you know, you're missing out because you haven't been doing that and they've been doing that and you want to copy and this is all too complicated. So again, I think there's a parallel with managing your finances. Like, you know, you manage your business, just, you know, do it for your business, mm-hmm. and have your goals very clear for yourself. And if you think someone is doing great things, just reach out, see how you can work together in a way that's going to work for both of you.
Right.
I think that's really, really important, and be open about it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and that's fine. And maybe in a year time, that will work, and which is fantastic. So I think working with competition or with people doing the same thing also for me is a way of sort of going out of your comfort zone a little bit. And that's quite interesting, because when we talked with each other, we can be very direct about, you know, the things that work for us that are not going to work, or, you know, new ways of working. And that can help you also on your strategy and try to think a bit differently. And I think for me, this all, like, you know, really interesting, like, conversation, and that should just elevate, like, you know, both of us or both people, like, working together. So trying to find a framework that works, but really focus on, you know, your business, your goals, and if you can also collaborate. So it's not a, you know, perfect science, and I don't think, you know, it's always going to be perfect, like this type of collaborations and partnership, but you will learn from doing a few of these. And, you know, if in the industry we would all work together, I'm sure we'll have a lot more women, you know, who feel financially educated and empowered.
Definitely. I mean, something that you said that of course would resonate with me, given Raincheck's mission, is this point about, you know, having each of us having very clear and distinctive business and personal goals. And the thing that I always say to the Rainmaker community is that, you know, for example, when you're setting your financial goals don't exist in a vacuum. They have to be tied to something, and it has to be part of a broader life vision or goal. And, you know, part of that journey of discovery is making sure that those goals are uniquely yours. And it doesn't mean they have to be unique in the sense that nobody else has ever possessed that goal before or has tried to pursue that goal in the past. It's more about making sure that you have full ownership of that goal and full agency in pursuing that goal. And I think that's one of the things that lots of us really struggle with, this idea of really living life entirely on our own terms, which is why it's so important that, you know, I reiterate this message so many times. When I was thinking about what the vision, you know, having updated the vision in the last 6 months, I would say, and thinking, what is it that I really want to be able to say? Yes, Raincheck is helping women take control of their financial futures, but actually it's more than that. It's about helping us build that sustainable long-term wealth and live life entirely on our own terms, unapologetically. And the only way to do that is to really feel like you're clear on what you're doing, and that you can be an admirer of what somebody else is doing, but that you're, you know, it's not going to veer you off course. It's not going to become yet another distraction or noise. Definitely that resonates.
And it's not easy.
I think, seeing what we've
had this discussion, like seeing what, you know, you all go at different speed because you have different constraints, different objectives. You know, if you, for me, like I value a lot, you know, family and seeing my family and kids and stuff. So for me, it may not be the right time to, you know, accelerate and go and raise funding today for Vespod. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just one example, but you have to, I don't think we have a balance, but you have to have your little, you know, cursor and see, okay, this is more important for me at the moment and I'm going to work there and maybe later it's going to be there. So it's how do you align sort of this with a partner, because you don't want to be pushed into doing things that, you know, are going to be too much for you or are going to sort of delay you in your other things that you're working on. So I think being very, very clear on your own objectives for me is the number one priority.
Mm-hmm. So just coming back to you and your finances, Emily. So can you tell us, if you wouldn't mind sharing, one of your biggest financial showstoppers, so something that had the potential to derail you, and how you managed to overcome it?
Yeah, I think for me, coming from sort of a corporate background, and especially in banking, and being a full-time employee, it was such a big transition when I moved into entrepreneurship and, you know, being my own boss and building a business. And I thought, you know, I don't know if you had the same experience, but, you know, when you get your regular salary and stuff, one day it just stops and you start building your thing and it takes time and you have to use some of your savings because you can't pay yourself. Mm-hmm. At some point I was like, you know, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's crazy because I managed to, you know, I started like earning money when I started working in banking and the money was good and I could do, you know, a lot of things with it, and save money and spend it and decided I want to, you know, build a business and stuff. But this sort of stopped and I was like, am I now shifting to like a scarcity mindset? Do I think it's going to be hard to actually make money for my business and pay myself? And I think it took a little bit of time for me to realize that's okay, actually. You know, you can run your business. It can be really successful. You actually have a lot more upside than when you're in a full-time job. You know, you build your business under your own, your own definition of, you know, success, wealth, whatever it is. But I think it took me some time to sort of readjust. And I think that comes to understanding, you know, self-worth, how maybe others see you, what you really want for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit of work on, you know, money mindset and understand that I think you can really achieve what you want in life, but it takes a little bit of effort, a little bit of adjustments, and it can't be all perfect from the get-go. So for me, yeah, really, you know, launching Vespod, making sure it's a sustainable business, making sure it's sustainable for me also personally, I think was a big learning curve.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, you know, when we think about that transition from corporate life through to entrepreneurship, because I was exactly the same, although I took the opportunity to leave and never return after my second maternity leave, because I was like, well, I'm already on a reduced salary or reduced, you know, on maternity pay. So, you know, let me get used to this level of income. But it's still a massive transition from what you were earning to suddenly earning nothing. But in contrast, I know you talked about scarcity mindset. What had the potential to be a financial showstopper for me was my wild optimism. So I'm somebody, I will leap out of a plane with no parachute. And even if I'm like hurtling to the ground, like I'm about to slam into the ground, I'll be like, oh, it's fine, because someone's going to come with a parachute, or I will make a parachute out of my bra or out of my jacket. Like I have such crazed optimism about things. And it works very well in lots of instances, but definitely, you know, that transition, you know, through to setting my own business up, that was a real, you know, the harsh reality of that from a financial perspective was, I mean, it was a real lesson and learning curve for me. So definitely can relate to that. Okay, so my final question before we get to the quick fire questions then. So one of the things that we talk about all the time in the Rainmaker community, particularly when we talk about investing, is that we are our own biggest investment by far. So, you know, it's a really nice, encouraging and comforting message for people wherever they are in their kind of investment journey. You know, I have people that are really savvy investors, as well as those that have never invested before and want to, you know, take their first step. And when we do one of the exercises around, you know, let's look at your balance sheet, the balance sheet for your life. And they're like, oh my God, I've got no assets. And I'm like, but you are an asset. Like everything that you've invested in yourself and your learning is massive. Like, and we mustn't undervalue or underestimate that. So from your perspective, what would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself and how has it transformed you?
Yeah. So for me, I mean, outside of all those like more like financial, you know, aspects and investments, I think doing a training in meditation, like two years ago, like I started to do like some transcendental meditation. I mean, this is one of these techniques where they give you a mantra that you repeat yourself. And we started to do that because with the kids, it was going a bit too crazy with work and stress, and started to meditate twice a day. And I mean, this didn't cost me actually a lot of money, but it was such a good return on investment. So for me, it's making sure I actually invest some time off from work and from all, you know, the being busy all the time, and that I take the time, like maybe 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, and I don't do it every day, and it's been like a roller coaster over the past year and a half, obviously, but making sure I take this time off for myself. So that's one of my priorities, and that helps me reduce my, you know, level of stress, see more the big picture, don't get, you know, too excited or too annoyed, or have these like lows and highs, especially, you know, with the kids when they're really tired and they all start screaming at the same time.
Yes.
So I think this really, really helps. And also on the side, I mean, I used to do a lot of sports when I was young, and I was really missing that. So I started to do a lot more like yoga, meditation. And now when I can try to do sort of a treatment, if it's osteo or seeing a physio once in a while, but trying to have this regularly in my calendar, because I realized last year, you know, could have, I mean, of course, when also in lockdown, but months without doing any of these things. And then you wake up and you're like, wow, you know, I've just been working, but what's the point?
Yes.
What's the point? I feel stressed. I'm tired. I get really annoyed when the kids start screaming. So I actually need this time for myself. But you know, when you're working on something, you don't want to just switch off and do your thing because you're missing out, you feel you haven't worked enough. So for me, it's really trying to work on this feeling that okay, it's okay to take some time off. And for me, the best way to do it is actually put it in my calendar.
Yes.
And now I have, you know, big bulk of time in my calendar, and I know this is like podcast editing, this is newsletter editing, and I try to respect it, because otherwise you just do 10,000 things at the same time and you don't do the things that are important to you. So I know, you know, usually Monday is like a Vespod day, and I do trying to think about Vespod and the strategy and stuff. And Friday is more a day for me, even if I still work, but I want to take Friday off.
Yes, same.
If I can. I think in the evening, you know, I used to work most of the evenings and do my workshop. So, you know, edit a podcast or write my questions and stuff like that. But it's still work, even if you really enjoy it. And now I'm like, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, okay, you know, if you have stuff to do, you can. Thursday, no way. And actually now we said, okay, Thursday night we're going out to see friends,
nice,
dinner, have a drink, do something else. And then it's the weekend, and usually the weekend, when you have kids and young kids, you don't have time to do a lot of work. And I thought, okay, I won't be able to do all the things I was doing before, but actually you can. It's just trying to be more efficient. And I think women are really, really good at that.
Yes.
And you realize if you go, you've been on maternity leave, or actually you're taking care of the baby and trying to sort of work at the same time, if it's your business or if you're a freelancer, you can actually do it. I think we can be really, really efficient and productive. So I think it's removing the sort of busyness of life and really focusing on the more productive and having a goal, like each day, what are the three things I want to achieve today? One, two, three, I've done them,
yes,
I'm happy. Of course, there's all these things on my to-do list. I didn't have time to do all these emails. And I'm sorry if I didn't reply to you, but you know, it's like trying to make sure I sort of tick the box and I'm happy with what I've done. And I can move on.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you know, you're never going to have everything done. there's always stuff that comes up and take time for yourself. I think it's the most important thing.
I completely agree. That's such a nice message for us to conclude the podcast with before we get on to our quick fire questions. So Emily, I've sent these through to you, but I'm going to pick three at random, okay? Okay, so the first one, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on? Don't say children.
Travel.
Where would you go?
Well, children already, but yeah, alternative.
Travel. Where are you going?
I don't know, like skiing. I'd love to go skiing in Japan. I'd love to go surfing in Indonesia. So for me, if you can combine like a sport and a destination, I'd love to do sort of a yoga teacher's training in India. So I don't know how, what. But you know, I think doing these things for me is great. And I'd love to be able to work and travel at the same time. And we've been, that's what we've been seeing over the year. Last year and a half is that it's possible to work remotely.
Definitely.
And you know that.
I do know that.
so it's how do you combine these things? But for me, travel is amazing. And especially for kids, like, you know, seeing what's happening in the world. I think there's different ways to travel and we have to be careful with the way we travel in terms of really showing what's happening in the world. But I think it's really good school.
Definitely, completely agree. Okay, finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am what?
So it's funny, I read your question and I was trying to think about that. But in the end, you know what? What I'm trying to do is really don't mind about what other people are thinking. For me, I'm like, actually, I don't know. And it doesn't really matter for me.
Yeah. Okay. The book that changed my life is...
Yeah, so for me, Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Yeah, maybe you've
read this
one.
Book.
Mm-hmm.
How to change, I think the full title is Changing the Way You Think to Fulfill Your Potential. I think everyone should read this book. I read it like a few years ago. I know now they're recommending it in schools and stuff. It's having a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset because I think, you know, the power of the mind is actually huge. And for, you know, finances and everything else.
Yeah, that's a brilliant recommendation. Transformational, completely agree. Emily, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure, as it always is, when we get together and we have a chat. Where can people find you and find out more about Vestpod?
Yeah, thank you, Dev. So you can find me on vestpod.com and you can listen to our podcast, The Wallet, that you can find on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify and Acast. And on Instagram, you can find my daily little stories and posts at Vestpod.
Wonderful. Emily, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Dav.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.